Today is Tuesday, February 23, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden marks 500,000 American coronavirus deaths.
Today we mark a truly grim, heartbreaking milestone. 500,071 dead.
Also ahead, Facebook restores news content in Australia.
Facebook's ban on news content in Australia is being reversed after days of negotiation.
Plus, Nigeria prepares for a possible Ebola outbreak. These stories and more are next. President Joe Biden led Americans in observing a moment of silence on Monday to mark the grim milestone of 500,000 deaths from COVID-19. He urged Americans to set aside partisan differences and fight the pandemic together.
Each day, I receive a small card in my pocket that I carry with me in my schedule. It shows the number of Americans who have been infected by or died from COVID-19. Today, we mark a truly grim, heartbreaking milestone. 500,071 dead. That's more Americans who have died in 1 year in this pandemic than in World War I, World War II, and the Vietnam War combined. That's more lives lost to this virus than any other nation on Earth. But as we acknowledge the scale of this mass death in America, we remember each person and the life they lived. We often hear people described as ordinary Americans. There's no such thing. There's nothing ordinary about them. The people we lost were extraordinary. They spanned generations. Born in America, immigrated to America. But just like that, so many of them took their final breath alone in America. As a nation, we can't accept such a cruel fate. While we've been fighting this pandemic for so long, we have to resist becoming numb to the sorrow. We have to resist viewing each life as a statistic or a blur or on the news. We must do so to honor the dead, but equally important, care for the living, those who left behind. So today, I ask all Americans to remember. Remember those we lost and those who left behind. But as we all remember, I also ask us to act, to remain vigilant, to stay socially distant, to mask up, get vaccinated when it's your turn. We must end the politics and misinformation that's divided families, communities in the country, and has cost too many lives already. It's not Democrats and Republicans who are dying from the virus. It's our fellow Americans. It's our neighbors, our friends, our mothers, our fathers, our sons, our daughters, husbands, wives. We have to fight this together as one people, as the United States of America.
U.S. Attorney General nominee Judge Merrick Garland told lawmakers Monday an investigation into the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol will be his first priority if he is confirmed. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more on President Joe Biden's speak to be the nation's top law enforcement officer.
The nominee for the nation's top law enforcement job, vowing a broad investigation into the underlying causes of the January 6th riot.
I think this was the most heinous attack on the democratic processes that I've ever seen, and one that I never expected to see in my lifetime.
The Department of Justice is already prosecuting hundreds for their role in the riot. Garland was asked if he would consider a broader definition of people to prosecute, a definition that could potentially include former President Trump.
That you will not rule out investigation of funders, organizers, ringleaders, or aiders and abettors who were not present in the Capitol on January 6th.
We begin with the people on the ground, and we work our way up to those who are involved and further involved. And we will pursue these leads wherever they take us.
An experienced U.S. judge, Garland was nominated in 2016 by then-President Barack Obama to fill a vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court. Senate Republicans held up his nomination, citing the upcoming 2016 presidential election. Now Garland is poised to take over for Trump's attorneys general, who drew Democrats' anger for the way they handled that post. But Republicans have also argued that was a problem under the Obama administration as well.
The Department of Justice was politicized and weaponized in a way that was directly contrary to over a century of tradition of the Department of Justice of being apolitical and not a partisan tool to target your opponent.
Garland told senators he does not view the job as a political position.
I am not the president's lawyer. I am the United States lawyer.
The Senate is likely to confirm Garland by early next week. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Military-run Myanwadi News reported on Monday evening that Junta Chief General Min Aung Hlaing had said the military was following a democratic path and that it wanted to use minimal force against protesters. Libby Hogan of Reuters reports.
Myanmar's military chief has threatened to crack down on any media outlets if they continue to use the word coup to describe the armed forces takeover. That's according to reports by military-run broadcaster Myawadi News on Monday evening, who quoted General Min Aung Hlaing saying that they will take action and withdraw licenses from the media if they use the word coup government. Myanmar's security forces have shown more restraint since the coup compared to previous crackdowns in almost half a century of military rule in the country. Even still, three protesters have been killed and nearly 700 people have been arrested. Monday also saw a nationwide protest and general strike where both local shops and international brands like KFC and delivery service Food Panda closed for the day. From the central plains in the ancient city of Bagan to the largest city, Yangon, tens of thousands gathered to protest against the coup. Some stomped on posters of an alleged Myanmar army sniper. Others waved posters supporting the civil disobedience movement and raised a three-finger salute of resistance, a symbol borrowed from the Hunger Games films. Western leaders have stepped up pressure on military leaders, with the US adding two more generals to a sanctions list on Monday. The EU also said it was considering targeted sanctions on businesses owned by the military.
That's Libby Hogan of Reuters. Global media giant Facebook is restoring news content to its users in Australia after resolving a dispute with the government. Facebook had blocked them over proposed media regulations. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Last week, Facebook blocked Australians from sharing and reading news stories on its platform in a dispute with the government in Canberra. It has championed a new media bargaining code that would make Australia the first country to force big tech firms to pay for news content reposted on their platforms. But Facebook's ban on news content in Australia is being reversed after days of negotiation. Analysts say both sides have made concessions. The government has made changes to the legislation. Facebook and Google will be allowed to operate outside the new code if they can satisfy the government that they've struck suitable deals with Australian media companies. Australian Treasurer Josh Frydenberg.
Australian news will be restored to the Facebook platform. And Facebook has committed to entering into good faith negotiations with Australian news media businesses in seeking to reach agreements to pay for content.
Belinda Barnett is a senior lecturer in media and communications at Swinburne University. She hopes the tech firms will act in good faith and negotiate fairly with Australian media companies, big and small.
If we manage to get reasonable deals for all eligible outlets, including rural regional publishers, the ABC and so forth, I think it will be a good thing. Ideally, have liked to have seen them designate Google and Facebook under the code so that it's directly enforceable.
Google has reached multi-million dollar deals with several major Australian publishers and broadcasters. The legislation has been passed by the lower house of the Australian Parliament and is expected to receive final approval by the upper chamber, the Senate, this week. The progress of Australia's social media laws is reportedly being closely followed in other parts of the world, including Canada and the European Union. Traditional media outlets in Australia have complained that as their advertising revenues have collapsed, social media platforms have benefited from their quality journalism without paying for it. After days of division, Australia and Facebook are, for now at least, friends again. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
More than two dozen US senators have called on President Joe Biden to reverse his predecessor's recognition of Morocco's sovereignty over the Western Sahara. The Moroccan government has intensified its lobbying in Washington to garner support for its claims over the Western Sahara. William Lawrence, professor of political science at American University in Washington, discussed the issue with VOA's senior analyst, Mohamed El-Shenawy.
It is true that the Biden administration announced that it's reviewing all of the Israel normalization agreements, and already it's suspended arms sales to the UAE along with Saudi Arabia. It's considering whether the Sudan government even had the legal authority to normalize as a transitional government. And it's looking at the Morocco agreement as well. But in the statement at the State Department, it was clear that they were congratulating Morocco and Israel for its normalization and don't want to rock the boat. The Morocco deal is problematic. And so what I suspect the Biden administration will do is it will slow walk any of the Trump commitments, such as the creation of a consulate in the Western Sahara in Dakhla or Layoun. And the fact that 25 senators wrote a letter means that it would be hard for the U.S. government to give authorization for such programs. What I do expect at some point is a U.S. statement of principle on annexation of territory by force. And that issue has been raised by Senator Inhofe and Senator Murphy, who say, how can the U.S. oppose Russian actions in Crimea and eastern Ukraine but support Morocco annexation? So I think that's where we're going to see some concessions of the Biden administration to the Senate on that principle.
The official stance of most countries, including the U.S., has been to hold a referendum in Western Sahara to determine the fate of the region. What are the options for the Biden administration in dealing with this situation while maintaining the strong U.S.-Moroccan relations?
They were exactly the same as they were before the Trump deal, which is why even the Trump announcement made two references to the previous U.S. position. So under international law, the process at the U.N. is really the only process. Any outside recognition is not material to the legal concerns. And under the 1991 ceasefire accord, there's supposed to be a referendum. Now, the ceasefire ended in late October, and now we have a low-intensity conflict. So the real business at the UN right now is not determining the final status of Western Sahara, but ending the conflict. We also have a UN monitoring mission that's supposed to monitor a ceasefire that's ended. And so we're going to have a process not entirely unlike what we have for Libya right now, leading to a ceasefire and then political negotiations. The U.S. position since the 1970s and now has been contradictory, because on the one hand, the U.S. is sympathetic to the Sahrawi quest for self-determination, but it also has this long relationship with Morocco going back 200 years and strengthened during the Cold War and after 9/11. So the political question is, can the U.S. both have a good relationship with Morocco and respect Sahrawi rights? And I think it can. And ultimately, if we have a deal on the final status of Western Sahara. It would work well both for the Sahrawis and the Moroccans to have some sort of power sharing agreement. Neither side supports that right now, but it would make a lot of sense, as was in the Baker Plan in the early 1990s, for Morocco to cooperate with the Sahrawis on some aspects of their governance, like foreign affairs and military defense, and have the Sahrawis run the internals in a sovereign manner. You would want the two future countries, if it was two future countries, to be working close together.
That's William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, speaking with my colleague, Mohamed El-Shenawy. This is the Voice of America. Police in Georgia have stormed the headquarters of the country's main opposition party and arrested its leader. The arrest of Nick Amelia, head of the United National Movement, aggravates the political tensions that have been rising since the October parliamentary election that the opposition is demanding to be rerun. The move by police came hours after parliament named a new prime minister, whose predecessor opposed arresting Amelia because of concerns it will escalate the political crisis. The wife of Mexican drug kingpin Joaquin El Chapo Guzman has been arrested in the United States and is accused of helping her husband run his multi-billion dollar cartel and plot his audacious escape from a Mexican prison in 2015. The Justice Department says 31-year-old Imar Carolel Alspiro, a dual citizen of the U.S. and Mexico, was arrested at an airport near Washington on Monday and is expected to appear in federal court on Tuesday. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Iran's parliament says an interim inspection agreement reached with the International Atomic Energy Agency Sunday is, quote, illegal, unquote, leaving its application in doubt. The three-month agreement allows for continued limited inspections of Iran's nuclear facilities. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Iran's parliament appears to have left in limbo the interim nuclear inspection accord reached over the weekend, saying that the government of President Hassan Rouhani overstepped its authority. It remains unclear if the country's Council of Experts, the ultimate arbiter in such matters, will revoke the agreement. Parliament Speaker Mohammed Bakr Khalibaf indicated in a tweet that the interim inspection deal, cobbled together by International Atomic Energy Agency head Rafael Mariano Grossi and Iranian nuclear chief Ali Akbar Salehi, requires parliamentary approval and as such cannot be implemented. IAEA Chief Grossi told journalists in Tehran Sunday that the interim deal was a stopgap measure designed to prevent a total collapse of the nuclear inspection regime.
We confirmed that Iran will continue to implement the Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement without any limitation, as they have been doing so far. My hope has been to be able to stabilize a situation which was very unstable, so that other political consultations at other levels can take place and we can avoid a situation in which we would have been flying blind.
Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh told journalists Monday that the interim deal is limited in scope and does not breach Iranian law. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
A flight carrying 11,000 Ebola vaccine doses arrived in Guinea on Monday in the capital Conakry after it was delayed for a day by bad weather. The start of inoculations in the Nzerokore region, where an outbreak of the deadly virus was declared last week, is now expected on Tuesday. The United Nations World Health Organization says all the doses will be deployed within hours. Guinea has recorded 4 confirmed and 4 possible cases, including 5 deaths. In the first resurgence of Ebola since the 2013 and 2016 outbreak that killed 11,300 people in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Meanwhile, the Nigerian Center for Disease Control is preparing for a possible Ebola outbreak as the country struggles with a second wave of the coronavirus. Authorities say surveillance at land borders and airports have been increased, especially from countries where outbreaks have been reported. For more, I spoke with Dr. Anthony Ibe, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Howard University and Georgetown School of Medicine in Washington.
We want to look at where the person is coming from. The people who are coming from where we now know there's an outbreak, I think we should restrict those people from coming in. That would be a reasonable thing until the outbreak is under control in those areas. Then mount a screening regimen for every other person. Otherwise, the country will be in trouble. And at the same time, also alert the healthcare personnel in the country about the possibility of Ebola showing up into the country. Furthermore, without causing panic.
What are some of these practices that may lead to an Ebola outbreak?
Some of those practices would be our funeral and burial practices, which involve, in some cases, washing the body of a dead person because of funeral rites. Those practices should stop. At this time, I know there are cultural issues, traditional issues, but when we look at it, that this can be a way to spread the disease in case that person, that individual died from Ebola or any of these infectious disease processes. Then avoid the contact with blood and body fluids, such as urine, feces, saliva, sweat, semen and vaginal fluid. So in that case, for that area, people should consider using barrier methods if they are not in a monogamous relationship.
What are some of the surveillance measures to detect Ebola, and does Nigeria have the capacity to do this?
I mean, without sounding condescending or so, we all know that all developing areas have very poor healthcare infrastructure. And even in developed countries, we see how their healthcare infrastructure have been really overwhelmed by the pandemic of COVID-19. Then when you now think about developing areas where they already have poor healthcare infrastructure, it is therefore frightening to think about Ebola coming back to Nigeria against the background of COVID-19. That is very frightening.
That's Dr. Anthony Ibe, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Howard University and Georgetown School of Medicine. He spoke with me from Washington. India and Chinese troops have withdrawn from a disputed border that triggered a 9-month-long standoff between the two countries, but rebuilding ties will not be easy as disputes linger. However, trade ties between the two large Asian economies are expected to improve. Anjana Patricia has a report.
Chinese and Indian artillery and tanks have rolled back, and soldiers have retreated from the banks of the strategic Pangong Lake, which straddles their border in the Himalayas. In video released on the pullback, the Indian Army said temporary structures erected by the Chinese have been dismantled. The disengagement, after a 9-month standoff from the most fractious point in India's Ladakh region, is significant. But it is only a start.
It's a tentative step. But yes, it is aimed at diffusing the tension which exists. And particularly at this spot around Pangong. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Indian Defence Minister Rajnath Singh told Parliament earlier this month that disputes persist along the border known as the Line of Actual Control, or LAC.
There are still some outstanding issues with regard to deployment and patrolling at the LAC. We will focus on these in further discussions.
Talks have started on stepping back from 3 other friction points along the border in Ladakh. But tensions in the Himalayas are likely to simmer amid growing suspicion in India, which has accused China of border incursions.
The main point is that, what did the Chinese hope to achieve by doing what they did? What was their intention? And certainly those will be factors that will be in the minds of the Indian planners. And will ensure that we will be vigilant in future, more vigilant in future for Chinese actions.
Restoring economic ties may be easier. India banned Chinese apps such as TikTok and raised barriers to Chinese investment as military tensions spiked last year. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. and have a great day.